Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we turn to yesterday's January 6th committee hearing, maybe the most devastating so far for Donald Trump and some of his top aides, as a Trump White House insider revealed what many in his circle, including then-Attorney Rudy Giuliani and Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, knew leading up to the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol and what they did during it. And if you didn't hear it yourself, maybe you're one of those people who tape this so you can watch it as weekend entertainment. Maybe there's nobody like that, but maybe it was you. But if that's you, spoiler alert, there was testimony including about Trump knowing that people in the January 6th crowd were heavily armed, and he and his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, dismissing that as a concern, and that Trump physically tried to grab the wheel of his car from his Secret Service driver to take the car to the Capitol when the driver refused to go, and that many people from Trump's most inner circle urged him repeatedly to tell the rioters to go home, but he waited for hours, even encouraged them with a tweet, and said to his aides at the White House that they were doing nothing wrong. Here's Cassidy Hutchinson, yesterday's witness. On January 6th, she was the principal assistant to White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. She talks here about something she said to him that day about the evolving scene and what she heard from Rudy Giuliani.
I remember leaning against the doorway and saying, I had an interesting conversation with Rudy. Mark, sounds like we're going to go to the Capitol. He didn't look up from his phone and said something to the effect of, there's a lot going on, Cass, but I don't know. Things might get real, real bad on January 6th.
Now, Giuliani and Meadows, like the five Republican Congress members who had been referenced previously in a hearing, asked for presidential pardons from Trump. According to Hutchinson, that revelation was new yesterday. Giuliani and Meadows' pardon request begging the question, what crime did they think they may have been committing? Joining me now to recap yesterday's hearing is Michael Cranish, national political investigative reporter for The Washington Post, co-author of the book Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power. And his article today in The Washington Post is called Cassidy Hutchinson's Path from Trusted Insider to Explosive Witness. Michael, thanks for coming on today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So let's talk about Cassidy Hutchinson's path from trusted insider to explosive witness. She is somebody that most Americans never heard of until yesterday. And then this was a surprise hearing that wasn't even scheduled. So who is she and how much of a trusted insider was she?
Well, it's pretty extraordinary. At the time of some of these events that you just described, she was just about to turn 24 years old. She grew up in Pennington, New Jersey, went to Christopher Newport University in Virginia, got a couple of internships while she was in college on Capitol Hill with Senator Ted Cruz and Representative Steve Scalise, and then applied for an internship at the White House.
And by the way, can I just jump in on that?
Sure.
And those are very conservative credentials, right? Interning with, of all members of Congress, Ted Cruz and Steve Scalise.
Yes, very much. And then she got a much coveted, one of the most sought after internships probably in the country, internship to work at the White House. She worked in the Office of Legislative Affairs. So she got that. And then when she graduated from college, which was in the spring of 2019, if I recall correctly, she then got a full-time job at the Office of Legislative Affairs in the White House. And then Mark Meadows came to be chief of staff in March 2020. So she's 23 at this time, and she eventually becomes his principal assistant. She has an office just steps away from the Oval Office and next to Mark Meadows. So she has extraordinary access. She's the, you know, by any definition, one of the youngest and least experienced persons in the White House, and she's central. She really sees and hears a lot. So, you know, unlike Watergate, we don't have evidence that there's been a taping system where we hear what people are saying in the Oval Office, but we have been getting in the last couple of hearings descriptions, fly on the wall descriptions from people who heard very important conversations that really changed some of the perspective about what we know about what happened, particularly in the days up to and on January 6th.
She's only 25 now, so I guess she was 23 then. And
she just turned 24, so
at that time,
that's in middle of December of 2020. She turns 24 She's witnessing all this. She had studied political science, American studies. She wanted to be a public servant. It's extraordinary by any measure to be in the position that she was in to see this.
And you reported that some people derisively called her Chief Cassidy. And even House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's staff asked White House aides why she was in on legislative meetings. Why did she rise so high so fast?
Simply that Mark Meadows relied on her, depended on her. We haven't heard Meadows explain why, but clearly, he made this young woman his principal aide and put an awful lot of confidence in her. She accompanied him to many meetings. According to one of my colleagues reporting, answered some of his texts or emails and so forth. So she was there. She talked with him all day long from our reporting. So it's strictly because of Meadows, and presumably Trump signed off. We don't know that for sure, but you'd think such an important person who had an office right there. The White House, as Hutchinson herself mentioned, is a pretty small building. I covered the White House for 4 years when I was at the Boston Globe. And, you look from the outside and it looks like a large structure, but there's really not much place. Many of any senior aides have much less visible offices than Cassidy Hutchinson had.
Interesting. So what got her so disillusioned? I mean, Mark Meadows himself is refusing to testify. She agreed to come and give this explosive testimony live before the House Select Committee yesterday and reveal all this stuff. What happened?
Well, as far as we can tell from her testimony, she became very disillusioned by what she saw. And Trump, of course, never conceded the election. He said it was stolen. She described this very vivid anecdote that occurred on December 1, 2020, this was the day when the Attorney General then, William Barr, gave an interview to the Associated Press when he's saying that he had concluded that there wasn't evidence of such election fraud that meant the election was stolen. He said there was no evidence of that. And she describes this incredible anecdote where she is in her office, she hears a noise down the hall, she goes to investigate in the dining room, and the valet tells her that Trump just threw his plate of lunch against the wall, which is bleeding ketchup. The valet tells her that he's very, very upset over what Barr had said, essentially that the election wasn't stolen. And then she's hearing in the subsequent weeks that there's this big rally plan for January 6th. And at one point, hears reports that some of the people coming to this rally are going to bring all sorts of weaponry. So she's very concerned, and she hears security officials explain this to her boss, Mark Meadows, and she becomes increasingly concerned about what's happening and what Trump is saying about that in the days leading up to January 6th.
Let's play another clip. Hutchinson painted a picture of how so many people within the Trump White House knew that Trump wanted to spur on the people at his rally on the 6th to head to the Capitol and wanted to go with them. I mentioned that incident about trying to commandeer the car, according to what Hutchinson had heard. But let's listen to her recounting a conversation first that she had with White House counsel Pat Cipollone, warned about the criminal liability that Trump and some of the others might face. She speaks here with Congresswoman Liz Cheney, committee member. Hutchinson speaks first.
Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
Was that new to you, Michael?
Yeah, Pat Cipollone has not agreed to testify. He's talked to the committee informally. He's the White House counsel. He had defended Trump during the first impeachment. He is a potentially crucial witness. The committee has beseeched him to try to appear in public. He has declined so far. So what we have instead are relays of what he said from people like Cassidy Hutchinson. There's a couple of key people here we've talked about that if they testify, it might even be more explosive. Mark Meadows, for one, he's declined. It's cited for contempt by the Congress, but then justice didn't prosecute on that. But he has provided a lot of text messages that provided a lot of pathways for the investigation. Pat Cipollone, who a lot of people may not be as familiar with until the last couple of hearings, he was going around the White House day after day, you know, fretting that the president might be breaking the law on this or there might be laws broken. I wrote a story last week about an effort on January 3rd in which there was a person who was a mid-level justice official, Jeffrey Clark, the subject of last week's hearing, to make him attorney general so he would pursue perhaps allegations of fraud that the person who was acting attorney general said, you know, weren't there to pursue. And in that meeting on January 3rd, Cipollone said, you know, if we do that, it's a murder-suicide pact if we do what this person was suggesting in a letter to state legislatures around the country. So now here he is later saying he was worried if Trump, you know, goes to the Hill, there might be prosecution, maybe it'd be an obstruction of justice or inciting a riot or, you know, various other things. So he is a key figure, you know, it's someone that maybe we'll hear from eventually. He said, I think that there are some concerns about privileged conversations with the president. Of course, famously in Watergate, John Dean, the counsel to Nixon, testified explosively at the Watergate hearing. So I think there's a lot of people who are super interested in hearing from Pat Cipollone, Mark Meadows, among others.
He's in such an interesting position as somebody who was apparently counseling them to do the right things, at least to stay on the right side of the law. And yet in this context won't come forward and testify publicly. It's also crazy, isn't it, based on what you were just describing, that Cipollone in his high position is like, please make sure, Cassidy, and she's like 24 years old.
Yeah, you know, he was trying to go at certain points, it seems like he was trying to go through channels, which would have been the chief of staff who's supposed to theoretically, you know, provide access to the Oval Office so that the president's not overwhelmed. But we know very well that many times all sorts of people would gain direct access. And in fact, in the story I wrote last month about Mark Meadows and what he did regarding leading up to the days of the insurrection, he often would allow access for people who were feeding Trump all sorts of conspiracy theories and other things that, you know, some people believe helped fed the delusion that the election had been stolen. So, you know, Mark Meadows wrote what he called a memoir of his days as chief of staff. And in the memoir, he starts out by saying that he knew the most important job of a presidential chief of staff is to be able to tell the president when he's wrong. Did he do that? I've interviewed many White House officials, former officials, and asked them that question. Did you ever hear Mark Meadows tell Trump to his face that he was wrong? They had not been in such a conversation. Maybe there was a one-on-one where Meadows did that. He hasn't really said that, but he did lay out in his book that's what he would, you know, see as his job. The way Hutchinson painted Meadows, I think it's fair to say, you know, she, if you watch the hearing, time and again, she would sort of mimic or emulate Meadows looking down on his phone like some kind of teenager scrolling, and she would do the motion with her thumbs like someone scrolling up, not just teenagers scroll, I have to be honest, but, you know, of a person who was just endlessly scrolling through his phone. She would say she basically was trying to get Meadows to snap out of it. I think that were those were her exact words. And, you know, like maybe a parent would do to a kid. And, you know, oftentimes he wouldn't look up. I mean, it's pretty dramatic. You know, you look, you know, if you're a photographer at a hearing, you look for those moments when a witness moves their, you know, body to sort of visualize. And that's the moment she did, you know, try to emulate that action. And she constantly was saying how she was trying to get Meadows to pay attention. There were warnings about potential violence and other kinds of warnings. And she left the impression that Meadows was, I think it's fair to say, you know, feckless. She didn't use that word, but that's sort of what came across from her description. And there was one point at which she describes a conversation in which Meadows was warned about all sorts of things that could happen on January 6th. And he responded that the president doesn't want to do that. So it was a very damning part of the testimony. Now, in fairness, Trump has denied a lot of Hutchinson's account. Meadows hasn't spoken about Hutchinson's account. He hasn't provided testimony. So there wasn't cross-examination like there would normally be, you know, in a hearing that had all sorts of other members on it, right, or a court hearing. So there's much we don't know. But I think it's fair to say, you know, this witness, along with the witnesses last week, which included the acting attorney general and the deputy acting attorney general, they provided extraordinary fly-in-the-wall presentations that were as close as we've come to taped conversation, certainly not as vivid as a taped conversation, but as close as we've gotten.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio and live streaming at WNYC.org. A few more minutes with Michael Cranish from the Washington Post on yesterday's January 6th hearing. And now we get to this moment of high drama, which I think we should say, admittedly, is kind of third hand. Cassidy referring to something that someone told her about something that they say Trump did. But as the insurrection was moving toward the White House, or as the crowd, toward the Capitol, where the crowd was moving toward the Capitol, Trump, according to Hutchinson's testimony yesterday, wanted to go with them to the Capitol himself. He had said as much in his speech at the rally, and I'm going with you. So let's listen to a clip of Hutchinson describing a conversation with Bobby Engel, who was the head of Trump's security detail, and Tony Ornato, then White House Deputy Chief of Staff, on the day of January 6th.
The president said something to the effect of, "I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now." To which Bobby responded, "Sir, we have to go back to the West Wing." The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Ornato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
Wow, Michael. Take us further into that as much as you can on what Hutchinson said was going on at that moment in the car, maybe who this Mr. Ornato is that she heard it from, and what exactly Trump had in mind trying to, at least reportedly, commandeer a car away from the Secret Service driver.
Yes, and as you say, this is something that she's relaying that she heard from someone else. She said it was relayed about a person who also heard the description and didn't dispute it. Trump has denied it. We haven't heard from the two individuals that she mentioned, and there have been some reports about that the Secret Service would deny aspects of this. So there's much we don't know, but to set the stage, literally, Trump was on stage at the Ellipse on January 6th, and he said, "We're going to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you." And then he gets in the car, and Mark Meadows, in his memoir, said that this was just metaphorical. Trump was never intending to go to the Capitol. But other people said that Trump did want to go to the Capitol. In fact, he told my colleague Josh Dawsey in an interview some weeks ago that he did want to go to the Capitol, and the Secret Service stopped him. So there's that information as well. Trump, if he's going to go to the Capitol, that's exactly what Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, had warned shouldn't be done, because there have been all sorts of potential criminality involved if you're inciting folks, and that's when they're about to certify the election. So it would be pretty incredible. On top of what happened with the riot inside the Capitol, if the president's then there and, whatever he would have said. So she described it that he still wanted to go, that he wanted to follow through on what he said on the stage, and that they said, "We can't go there. They don't have the assets," by which they mean we don't have the security personnel to protect you up there. They all knew, and Trump knew, according to Hutchinson's testimony, that many of these people were carrying all sorts of different kinds of weapons. So they would have been very knowledgeable about that. The committee played police radio traffic, in which there was an officer saying, "There's a person here in a tree," or "There's a person here who's got an assault weapon," and so forth. So they were very concerned about that. As I mentioned earlier, was a White House reporter for 4 years, and I know how incredibly concerned, I can only imagine in this case, how concerned they would have been about security. I mean, they change movements all the time out of concerns, reports, rumors, whatever, that there might be the smallest kind of security threat. This was thousands of people, number of whom, they believed or knew for sure were armed. I can only imagine that if Trump was trying to go to the Capitol and they were aware of this, that someone would have said, "No, we can't do that," if that's what Trump was trying to do. Whether he actually put his hands on the steering wheel and reached to someone's clavicle, as she described, those two gentlemen, in particular, that she mentioned in testimony, it'd be great to hear from them and hear their part of the story. But we know from Trump's own words that he has said, he told the Washington Post, that he did want to go to the Capitol.
So to wrap this up, and then we'll have the news folks and Senator Gillibrand will join us after that. We'll talk more about this and other things. But, you know, yesterday it's like how many times can one jaw drop watching the revelations come one after another? But what do you see as the biggest good that can come out of it, or even the aim of the committee at this point? Because sometimes it seems like it's mostly about building a criminal case against Trump and his coup d'etat henchmen. But is it more than that?
Well, I wrote in the story today that, you know, she's, you know, worked for all these Republicans. She worked for the White House, and she's essentially, in effect, saying to Republicans who may hope to move on that, you know, hold on, there's more here to know. You should be concerned. I saw it firsthand. You know, I'm not a partisan. I was there trying to promote, you know, what the White House was doing. The committee itself can't, you know, bring charges. They're essentially going to give a report. And then, you know, for the public, we've had, you know, quite a number of hearings, and the witnesses have been increasingly explosive, if you will. It's really going to be important to watch what the Justice Department does. Are they going to, you know, indict Trump? I mean, I think that's what a lot of people are waiting to see. They're doing their investigation in a very slow, methodical way, as is their manner. There are other investigations that are going on. There is an investigation by the Office of the Inspector General at Justice. There's investigations going on in Georgia about what happened down there. So there, you know, there's a number of investigations. So at some point, no matter how explosive a person's testimony may be, these people are testifying under oath. Trump issues statements. Of course, those aren't under oath in the same, you know, in that manner. So, you know, the next step for a lot of people is going to be what's going to happen. Is there going to be any kind of charge brought against Trump or others who worked with him on a lot of these events that have been described?
Michael Cranish, national political investigative reporter for The Washington Post and co-author of Trump Revealed, An American Journey of Ambition, Ego, Money, and Power. Michael, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.